Sick and tired of hearing things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. It's been 14 years since the tragic events of 9/11, and we've had two cover-up, quote, investigations, the Congressional Joint Inquiry in 2002 and the 9/11 Commission Report released in 2004. The aftermath of 9/11 brought us endless war and a demonization of Muslims. This November 2015 marks the 52nd anniversary of another tragic event in our country's history, the murder of our president, John Fitzgerald Kennedy. And it brought us another bogus, quote, investigation, the Warren Commission report. And like 9/11, the JFK assassination brought us many years of endless war and the deaths of millions in Vietnam, Laos, and Cambodia. Today, Andrew Craig joins me on the show to shed light on the JFK assassination on this 52nd anniversary. Andrew Craig is a former journalist for the Hartford Courant, and he's also an attorney. He runs a blog called the Justice Integrity Project and is the author of two books. The first one, called Spiked, came out in the 1980s, and his more recent book is called Presidential Puppetry. He's also done a lot of research and writing on the Kennedy assassination, and in September of 2014, participated in the 50th anniversary conference of the Warren Commission report. Andrew Craig has been on the show a few times before to share his wisdom, and it's a pleasure to have him back again today. Andrew Craig, welcome to the show.
Oh, it's so good to be back, Cheryl. Thank you.
So I understand that there's a conference in Dallas, the anniversary of the JFK assassination in Dallas this year. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about that.
Well, a group called the JFK Historical Group is putting on what is the third rendition of an annual conference on the assassination and new developments. It's at the Dallas Crown Hotel from November 20th to 22nd, and I'm giving a talk on the 21st, Saturday. And the topic is essentially why people should care still about the JFK assassination, particularly young people.
Maybe you could tell us a little bit about that. Why should people still care about that? It's been over 50 years ago. What is it, 52 now?
My basic theme in this is that by understanding this particular and unique historical situation, we can much better understand what's going on right now, which is very hard to do because we have all kinds of government secrets, confusing comments from government officials and the media, and it's extremely hard to figure out what's going on, whether it's in Congress, the White House, or foreign affairs. But in this much-studied historical situation, we have millions of pages of declassified documents, and we can compare fairly accurately what people were saying, what important institutions were saying, against a kind of objective record. And some of these players and most of the institutions are still with us. So we know what they were capable of 53 years ago. 52, I guess it is. And that provides us an opportunity to assess what they're telling us now. So it's a unique opportunity. It's not just for historical buffs. And in fact, the reason I personally got into it as an investigative reporter is not a fascination necessarily with that historical event, but to try to work through in my current investigative reporting some of the very alarming possibilities that I was sensing. But there's just not so conveniently the full record of thousands of books and all these millions of pages of declassified materials.
So you see some of the same actors from then and now. Can you name a few of those?
Well, yeah, mostly institutions, although maybe to more directly answer your question, some of the actors are pretending to be journalists. So, for example, it's little remembered, except by researchers, that Dan Rather, Bob Schieffer, Bill Moyers, Jim Lehrer all got their start, really, in a big way, by covering the JFK assassination, and many, many others who were there and playing important roles went on to long careers, and most of them are close to retirement, but they're still, those that are alive, are still held up as the great truth tellers and the great examples of American journalism. And my research has indicated that all of them that I named there, and many, many others, and their employers, have a lot to be answered for, if not ashamed of, in their reports through the years, or their lack of reports through the years, about the very historical situation where they got their fame, they got their careers in many ways. And I will add as a footnote that Bill Moyers, who's just an incredibly eloquent man, a great force for progressive causes in his later years, was the press secretary for Lyndon Johnson. And as such, he was one of the most important people in America at that time. And if you believe, as I do, that there was a cover-up, he was the one person in charge of it. And we have declassified records indicating that. But when we look at him over his career, this is not really discussed, and yet that's a very important 50-year career. He formally retired earlier this year, but almost no one, except in a conversation like this on your show, has the ability to challenge people at that kind of Bill Moyers, Bob Schieffer, Dan Rather level.
So, like, Bill Moyers is, like, this really likable guy, you know, he looks like somebody you could really trust, and in more recent years, as you said, he looks like he's a leader of progressive causes. What do you think, has he changed, or is this more of the same, making us believe he's somebody he's not?
Well, I think it's very complicated. He was an ordained minister before he went to work for Lyndon Johnson. So Johnson must have seen within this young man great talent, but also a person whose career, words, and what must have been a commitment to spiritual matters would be useful to him. And in fact, we know that from the biographies of Johnson, like those of Robert Caro and elsewhere. And from the Moyers standpoint, we mostly have to speculate because among his vast outpourings of journalism, including great journalism, he's very rarely, if ever, talked about his role in the Kennedy assassination. And we have to assume that for someone so eloquent and thoughtful as he, that this kind of gap is not an accident. It must be a quite painful area of conflict. So we have to now move into the realm of informed, hopefully, supposition. And Johnson was one of the great charmers of American political life, with men and women, aides, voters, and so forth. But he was also capable of really vile and horrible actions, and noble actions as well, like the Civil Rights Act. But the cover-up of the murder of the president who preceded him is almost a certainty, and there could be much worse that Johnson and Moyers have to hide there. And if, as is likely in my view, Moyers was charmed by both the man and the opportunity for a young man to get ahead in Washington, this is a hard topic to raise. And in fact, one little-known thing, Cheryl, that struck me when Moyers retired earlier this year is that he was in charge of a foundation, the Bill Moyers Foundation, that had assets, as I recall, of $27 or $28 million, and was very generous to progressive news organizations such as Democracy Now! Show, I believe that's on PBS, and Mother Jones and The Nation magazine. And one of my friends, fellow JFK researcher Jerry Polyakov, who's been researching these matters since the 1960s, he looked at the list that I published, getting it from the Washington Post retirement story on Bill Moyers, and he said, this is exactly the list of progressive publications that will not dig into the Kennedy assassination. And I said, really?
Nor 9/11.
Yeah, and Jerry said, I've been trying to figure out why they won't do it, but when I see that in 1 year, Democracy Now! Got $700,000 from the Bill Moyers Foundation.
Yeah.
And so all of this, Cheryl, is going back to your question, why should we care now? Well, if you're getting news from CBS, which employed Dan Rather and Bob Schieffer in total for, you know, 50 years or so, if you're getting your news from PBS or these other outlets, it's important to know that all of them have maintained silence about relevant facts of this assassination for 52 years. And so the question is, what else are they keeping quiet?
Right. And we know one of them is definitely 9/11, and who knows what else, right?
Yes.
I actually went on several, like, Free Speech TV and Link TV and Democracy Now! And looked at some of the other foundations they're getting money from, and they're all getting money from almost the same sources, and they all won't touch Kennedy assassination or 9/11, so it's quite interesting.
Some of these people I've gotten to know in my work here in Washington. I've now been here about 25 years, and in a variety of ways, been a nonprofit executive and very interested in both civic issues but other things, just business development and so forth. But I've met Dan Rather, Bob Schieffer, and a number of others. And as I embarked about 7 years ago in my current incarnation, reporting underreported stories at the Justice Integrity Project, that I had hoped to go back to these people that I just mentioned and try to get on their programs now or get some blurb or something, because I've always admired their eloquence, their ability to tell a story. And actually, with Bill Moyers, he does so many different things. That one time at the National Press Club about 3 or 4 years ago, I went to hear a lecture that he gave, drug addiction of his son, heroin addiction. And I had hoped to talk with him afterwards about some of the things I'm doing, but I was just so impressed at the pain that he and his family had gone through. He was there with his son and wife, and describing how at one point they didn't even know where their adult son was, and he turned out to be in a drug den in New York City. And I wanted to mention this to your listeners to say that the headline of my answer to you is kind of blunt, but when we have a chance, like on the show with your generous amount of time, it becomes more complex and a lot more convoluted story. And so I never went up to Moyers then. I've never gone to Dan Rather and Bob Schieffer really again, because I realize that if I'm going to tell my stories, at least part of it is going to be about JFK. And what's the point of either hiding that from them or trying to get their endorsement? It's just better to, even in a celebrity-driven media environment and culture, it's better just to try to tell the story, have some compassion and empathy for what they've achieved otherwise, but still point out that this is very shameful for what they did on the JFK assassination.
Right. I know, like, Bill Moyers has been very good on pointing out the organization ALEC and what they're doing at state legislative levels to drive the legislation for big business interests, et cetera. So I appreciate what he's done on that. But I agree with you that it altered our nation, and not for the better, after the Kennedy assassination, followed up by many other assassinations and then false flags like 9/11. So it does have grave consequences. So you're going to be at this event in Dallas. And tell me, is there anything new that's come out in the research? I know in 1992, I guess a lot of documents were released that had been classified. Is there any new information out there that you've been researching?
Oh, there's tons of information, and I track it pretty closely. And in fact, I'm on five or six different Facebook groups of different researchers on JFK alone. And I'm also on an email list of scholars, most of whom have gone back at least 35 or 40 years in researching things, and they share what they're working on, what new points are coming out. So there's tons of stuff, and a lot of it will be revealed at this conference I'm speaking at, which is at the Dallas Crown Plaza. But I should mention that there's another conference that's important also right up the street at the Adolphus Hotel that covers the same days, and I'm registered to attend that one as well as speak at the other. And so I'm going to be shuttling back and forth between these two conferences where a lot of scholars and other researchers have saved up new information that's just coming out recently. But you mentioned 1992. There's been so much since 1992, Cheryl. I think too much of the world that follows this community, one of the biggest things is a new biography written by my friend David Talbot, the founder of Salon Magazine, on Alan Dulles. It's called The Devil's Chessboard, and it's the life of Alan Dulles, head of the CIA from 1953 to 1961, when President Kennedy forced him out along with his two top aides. Kennedy was furious at them. And Dulles ended up as one of the seven members of the Warren Commission, investigating the death that many of us think the CIA and his former colleagues there helped orchestrate. By the way, one of the other people forced out, General Charles Cable, actually. we don't need Dr. Sigmund Freud to know that one, that mistake. But anyway, General Cable, his brother, Earl Cable, was mayor of a place called Dallas.
Oh, no.
And so when people think, well, how could these things all be created? You know, how could a cover-up and so forth exist? Well, let's just say we know from declassified documents on other things, as well as this, that this is exactly what people at the CIA did. Is orchestrate plots. I mean, this is where spy movies come out of. And if you have a perfect death trap at Dealey Plaza, you know, kind of a bowl-shaped park where anything can happen, and that's where President Kennedy was killed. And by the way, it's just a couple blocks from the site of these two conferences later this month. All the pieces were in place. And so this new book, it's about 700 pages, The Devil's Chessboard, recounts the career of Alan Dulles going back to his days as a Wall Street lawyer with his brother, John Foster Dulles, future Secretary of State, where they represented some of the wealthiest families in world history as Wall Street lawyers, and then shuttled back and forth into the intelligence and foreign affairs community. And so that's an important book. Here's another development that I'm just writing a column for the Justice Integrity Project site. And I'm looking at this book, The Devil's Chessboard, and several other developments to point out recent illustrations of how much covert influence the CIA and other intelligence agencies have over our cultural and political and academic life and journalism. Now, here's what one of the reasons I'm talking about this. Just last week, a fellow JFK researcher, Jefferson Morley, who used to work at the Washington Post for many years as a reporter, he noticed that in the obituary of a man named Charles Briggs last week, the obituary in the Washington Post said that he helped found the sixth floor museum in Dallas, which is located on the sixth floor of the building where Oswald supposedly shot President Kennedy. And this sixth floor museum is like the major museum in Texas and arguably one of the major museums in the whole country devoted to this historical record of the assassination. And Jeff Morley makes the apt note, why would the number three person at the CIA help found a museum about the JFK assassination?
Yeah, very interesting.
And the reason, of course, although we have to put on our powers of supposition here, this just happened, but if the CIA and Alan Dulles and many others had this role in helping at the minimum, cover up the real story of the assassination and perhaps planning it using Cuban exiles and mafia triggermen. Well, of course they'd want to help run the museum. And I know that museum, and the longtime executive director also just died this year. And he had been considered a reasonably honest and straightforward researcher. And then he gets his job as head of the museum. And it's kind of a dream job for a researcher because you actually get paid for this stuff. But people said, well, he continued to be friendly, but suddenly the whole theme from him is always, well, Oswald did it. Maybe there's a few loose ends. But this museum is very pro-Warren Commission, anti-alternative evidence. Authors of books critical of the Warren Commission have a hard time getting their stuff in there. And it's all part of a pattern that I research elsewhere in American life, that what we think are independent cultural institutions are really have some hidden agenda or funding source. And there's lots of others. As you know, my book, Presidential Puppetry, points out that a lot of our political candidates, including President Obama and actually all other presidents after Jimmy Carter, have been assets of either the CIA or FBI before they entered politics. And we can look and see all kinds of influences in the media, in academia. And another such new development I'm going to write about tomorrow. So we've just talked about this museum. It turns out there's a new book by a professor at Providence College in Rhode Island. And he has found out through sleuthing, even though he's an English professor, that the very, very influential and famous Iowa Writers' Workshop was funded by the CIA, and that he was an attendee at this. It was one of the highlights of his career as a young academic. I think he still is. But he bravely researched this, and in it, he says that at this writer's workshop, they discouraged novels that addressed pressing social concerns, and that was a kind of rejected category, and the eminent, you know, I'm sure they're all wearing tweed jackets with horn-rimmed glasses and elbow patches and the whole thing. They'd look down their nose at people who wanted to convey through their novels important issues. And they'd say, well, why don't you just write an op-ed? And it's not literature. And what he, I think, is doing in his book, and he mentions some other famous writing workshops that similarly had this kind of funding, and also the Partisan Review or the Parisian Review that George Plimpton used to be in, but that was CIA funded too, it turns out. By the way, here's one new thing that I guess has been around, but I've just been writing about it in my 28 segment JFK Reader's Guide that's on the Justice Integrity Project site. I've recently documented and learned that the head of Life and Time magazine at the time of the JFK assassination was considered, Cheryl, get this, the number one expert in the United States on psychological warfare.
Wow.
So his name was Charles, initial C.D. Jackson. And he had started at Time Life with Henry Luce, Yale man, by the way. In 1931, Charles Jackson did. And he went back and forth between spy agencies and Time Life fortune. And he had service as assistant to President Eisenhower for, I think it was for psychological warfare or some title like that. But he was right there in the White House as assistant to the president. And then he goes to Time Life. And here's the implications, just to connect the dots.
Yeah.
And particularly for those who are younger in your audience, they probably don't recall that these were the two most important magazines in the entire United States. They were owned by the same company. But Life was this picture magazine that conveyed to us some of the most important images. It had competitors, the Look magazine and Saturday Evening Post, but none of them really had the stature of Life magazine.
Right.
And then Time magazine was much more important than what we see now on the newsstands. It was really the Bible of current affairs for busy people, particularly before TV news really took hold. Of course, there was no cable news, and newspapers weren't very good in a lot of ways. And so the responsible citizen would get Time magazine, or maybe Newsweek, or U.S. News and World Report, but the responsible citizen would get at least one of those throughout the country. And so to have both of those magazines under control of a psychological warfare expert.
Yeah, it's pretty frightening, actually.
And it doesn't end just there, because Jackson acquired the Zapruder film exclusively for Time Life magazine. And they suppressed it for a dozen years until a pirated copy seeped out a dozen years later. But only the editors of Time Life really had access to this movie of the assassination. And they used selective images to promote the Warren Commission story. And everybody else had to use these images and timeline and so forth. And the other thing is, he locked up the memoirs of Oswald's widow, Marina Oswald, exclusively. So here she is. She's the one who knows the guy. And they've got the memoirs exclusively. And you know what? They never published them.
Are they still locked up somewhere?
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, it's a slightly more complicated story. Mm-hmm. But the point is, if you think it's like a marketplace of ideas and that they want to make a buck by getting these two very important things for their publication, and then they sell the magazine and everybody gets to know, well, that can't be the whole story here.
Right.
Otherwise, they would have published her memoirs. It's a story worth vastly more dead than alive. And just like the Zapruder film, they didn't want people seeing that film. They wanted people to see parts of it.
And why didn't they want people to see it? What's revealed in that they didn't want people to see?
Well, part of it is Dan Rather's hypocrisy, because he was the only reporter allowed to see it. And he did a report on it 3 days after the assassination as a young CBS reporter. And in the report, and I'm paraphrasing now, but your listeners can look it up on YouTube and see it, he says, and you could see the president's head going violently forward with the fatal shot. Now, Oswald was supposedly at the rear. Well, actually, he was at the rear. And so the Warren Commission's report says only Oswald fired and only from the rear, and he had no collaborators or co-conspirators. And so if the Zapruder film shows the president's head moving forward, the kind of common sense view is, well, he must have been shot from the back, and that's where Oswald was. So the Warren Commission's right. But the point is that once you look at the Zapruder film, the head is actually going back.
Right.
And most witnesses thought shooting was coming from the right front, the so-called grassy knoll area. And if you look at photos, you see a bunch of people running up the hill, the grassy knoll, trying to find who the shooters were behind the picket fence there. And there's other evidence that I've done a lot of work on, I'm still doing work on, that if you take a look at Oswald, he may not have been at this sixth floor at all. He was in the lunchroom on the second floor 90 seconds after the thing happened. And if you look at almost every part of the evidence against Oswald, you just look at it with kind of an open mind, there's at least a question about almost all of it.
You've just been listening to the first part of an interview with author and journalist and attorney Andrew Craig. Tune in next week to hear the conclusion of this interview. Andrew Craig's website is justice-integrityproject.org, so justice-integrityproject.org, where you can find great articles and an in-depth guide to the Kennedy assassination. This concludes this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Thanks for listening.